I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ashley. And this, guys, is Nip Tuck Pod.
We are your girl chat. We say the things you want to hear, the things that you're thinking but you don't want to say out loud. And we're all about being strong, aspirational women who basically don't give a...
Lauren, anyway, if you want unfiltered chat, amazing beauty and product recommendations, then look no further, guys. This is the podcast where you will get all of the girly chat.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to part two of Vicky Patterson's Secret 2. This week, I am joined by none other than DJ Fationi. How are you doing, son?
I'm good, babe. I'm really good, yeah.
Can I just ask, the DJ Fationi thing, is it, like, ironic because there's no on you?
No, I used to be a right little heifer when I was about to. Because what happened was, at the beginning, I was really fit. I've always been thin. And then when I got to about 14 and that a lot of trauma happened, like I talked about before, like, you know, the abuse and stuff, I got really fat. So no one would ever come in. It's like a protection thing. So it was a name that people whispered behind my back, which Tony, Fat Tony. And I just owned it. I just took it off the map. I thought, you're not calling me that. I'll call it myself. So I just kept it and it's always stayed with me. I mean, you know, I always get people going, oh, you should change your name. I'm like, oh, yeah, right, I'm 56. Yeah, let me just change my DJ name while I'm still traveling, flying around the world, first class, yeah. You know what I mean? I'll go back to the beach, shall I? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, no, I feel like fucking own it exactly like you say.
So. Oh, 100%.
So how did the DJing first come about, mate?
I've always loved music, right?
Yeah.
Always. I come from a really musical family. My dad and my mom all play music, always constantly in the house. My brothers had sound systems in each of their rooms, like proper sound systems with mega speakers out the windows. And, you know, so growing up in that house...
Oh, God, I bet your neighbours fucking...
Oh, they hated us. You know what I mean? Especially when I turned the house into like a gay crack den. Afterwards, they hated it even more. But, you know, literally, we love music. So when I discovered nightclubs at 14 and going out, you know, I kind of just was always out from that moment. The moment, the first time I ever went out, I was out. That was it. Every night of the week. And then a club opened on a Saturday night, which was run by a guy called Steve Strange, Rusty Egan, and it was at the London Lyceum where Lion King is now. I got a job working on the door because I told him I was 16. Told him I was going to open my own night the same night and go up a competition, like the biggest flag ever. And they were like, "You come and
always
work.
Been a bullshitter."
Yeah. You know what I mean? Come and work on the door for us. So I worked on the door, and every week I would say, everyone's leaving the music shit. They weren't. It was just me being me. And they were like, listen, we're sick of you. Said, why if you, because one of them was the DJ. Everyone's leaving when you're on. They hate the music. So he was like, if you want to do it, why don't you, if you think you can do better, you do it. So the next week I turned up with four records. And that was literally it. And within a month, I had a residency at a club in London called The Wag on a Tuesday night. Then I literally, within 3 months, I was flying to New York backwards and forwards. It just literally went like that.
Honestly, Sean, I feel so jealous. Like, I almost feel a bit, I know, like, when I was growing up, clubbing was fucking class and going to Ibiza was class. And I remember like living me life and just having the best time and all the rest of it. But I feel like these days, there's not as many good clubs for kids. Like,
no, I think the problem with it is like anything, everything grows. It starts off really small. It starts off really underground, goes, gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it ends up in Printworks. And when it ends up in Printworks, where is there for it to go? Where is there for them to go? So what happens is with stuff, you know, it's like the force of nature. Things grow, they become really beautiful and big, then they die. And then something new comes. And I really think that we're at that turning point where everything's really big. And I just think that the minute that it goes more underground again, that's when all the really cool and clever and amazing things happen and clubs happen. I've seen it happen so many times, whether it be the end of Acid House, the beginning of Acid House, the beginning, you know, disco, all of these different genres that we've gone through at different times. I just think right now we're at that turning point. You know, we really are at that turning point again. And I just think, you know, we come from a blessed time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, honestly. But,
you know, culturally, we come from a fucking brilliant time of nightclubs. You know, I went to clubs that people could only dream of, or they only hear of in like fucking fairy tales, like Paradise Garage or Sound Factory or Area or, you know, the Limelight. I went to all of these places, you know, that become mythical in people's, you know, because every other, if you stop one cunt in the street and say, which favorite club they get? Oh, Bergheim. They've never been to Bergheim in their lives. They don't know what Bergheim was. But, you know, they heard that they need to say that. It's like stopping someone and they got headphones on. You go, what are you listening to? They'll think about, oh, what they need to say and come out with something cool. And when really they're listening to, like, the soundtrack.
The Frozen soundtrack.
You go, you're in my mind. They are, totally, you know. They're walking up the road like, let it go, let it. And then you stop and they go, oh, yeah, I'm listening to Oasis. And it's like... Do you know what I mean? They never tell you. Same with nightclubs. They'll tell you, yeah, I went there. Yeah, my mate's here. You know, I really think it's just a matter of going out, finding your people and finding what makes what you really love, whether it be thrash metal, whether it be deep house or whatever. Just don't be blinkered to anything.
Yeah. Like, you did go out and you did find your people and, like, oh my God, honestly, I don't want to like dredge up the past, but mate, like the people you knocked about with, it's just legend after legend after legend. Like Freddie Mercury gave me your first line.
But they weren't legends then. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I suppose, just your mates.
You know, they were. And you know, it's like people go, oh, you got the same celebrity mates. My mates are my mates. They just have different jobs to everyone else. Do you get what I mean? And it's like, you know, I've known all my closest friends I've known all my life. You know, whether it be Kate Moss or Boy George or any of those people, I've known those people since I was 13 or they were 13. It's bizarre. And they've grown up and grown into those jobs. You know, like whether it be Edward Emmerthal, I knew him when he was just a little stylist. Do you get what I mean? And now he's like running the world. You know, these people, you know, they're not my friends because of what they do. They're friends because of what we do. Do you get what I'm saying? There's a difference. And I just think, you know, you touched on who gave me my first line of cocaine. That story of Freddie, do you get what I mean? Freddie Mercury. You know, I didn't know him from Adam. I didn't know. I wasn't a Queen fan. I was into Soft Cell and Depeche Mode. I wasn't into Queen. That was my mum and dad that were into Queen. Do you know what I mean?
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? And it's like, and I just happened to be outside a club wearing Fiorucci. And they loved the idea that I, you know, and that was it. And I ended up back at their house and to a party at their house. And then that story was a part of just a conversation. And of course, when I did this Mixed Mag documentary, like at the beginning, just before the pandemic, 2.5 years ago, like it's been seen by nearly 7 million people. And it, of course, the tagline was Freddie Mercury gave me my first line of cocaine. So of course it's kind of like it come out as like a bragging story, and it's not. It was never meant like that. Do you get what I mean?
Of course. No, I feel like you've got so many good stories, Tony. Like you absolutely don't have to brag. However, if it was me, I would be fucking bragging.
Yeah, you know what? It's like, as I say, with the book, I've not done that in the book. You know, I've changed everyone's names because there's stories in there. Yeah, totally. There's stories in there that could, you know, if I didn't change the name, that they would have gone with it and made it into something the book's not about. And I don't want the book to be about those stories. I want the book to be about my story. And that's the difference. So when I was writing, I said, let's just change that person's name. That doesn't need to come out about them. It's not about them. It's about me. So we changed so many people's names. There's a story in there about a Hollywood actor and, you know, and his daughter. And I just completely changed, took both of their names out of it and just changed it to something totally different. Because it's, as I say, it doesn't need to be said about them.
Yeah. Oh, no, but I think that's lovely. And I think, don't get us wrong, I'm such a nosy cow and I would love to hear all the stories in that.
I'll tell you, don't worry, anything you want to know, I'll tell you.
I do think it would detract from the real, like, ethos of the book, what it's really
100%. 100%. Because, you know, as I say, the book's not about other people. It's about my story. And those stories are attached to my story because they're a part of that journey. And, you know, it would have been a really, really, really boring and painfully boring book and story to do if it was about other people. I don't need to sit here and go, oh, so-and-so did this, so-and-so. No.
Honestly, and there's enough stories about Freddie Mercury.
Anyway, it'll be funny. I did far better things than all of them put together, so let's make it about me and leave it at that, isn't it? That's what I say.
Right, back to Tony. Fuck everyone else. So, right, you're an Ibiza legend, mate, and I have just seen on your Insta, well, you've just been there recently, haven't you?
Yeah, I came back on Tuesday. Did the opening of Glitterbox, and I do a thing called the Wild Corner at High, which is the toilets. It's a nightclub in the toilets. It's the most insane part of the club.
And High is what used to be Space, right?
Yeah, it used to be Space. And so I do, they got this massive toilet with like a disco light ceiling. It's amazing. Anyone who's been will tell you how incredible it was. So I did that and I never big myself up, but I took it to another level. I've got my own residency there this summer, 50 fucking six. I've got an IB for residency again. I'm doing Friday nights with David Guetta and Idris Elba. Starting the 2nd of June. And it's literally, I'm there once a month. I was going to do a lot more, but diaries are full. So I'm doing literally a monthly residency throughout the whole summer back at High, which I'm really excited about.
Smashed it, mate. Well, I'm absolutely buzzing for you. How does it feel now? Because obviously you've been sober 16 years. Yeah. Like, what's the big difference? Like, I'm always mortal in Ibiza. So I feel like if I was going to go and be sober and I'm not off my head, all that, I'd really struggle. Like, have you found there's a huge difference?
You struggle because you set yourself up to struggle. Okay. I probably have more fun than our entire community on the dance floor put together. I go, I'm not wanting to, what's in someone else's pocket. I'm not wondering where everyone else is. I'm not constantly on my phone. I'm in the moment. And that's the difference today. I as a DJ, there are two types of DJs. There's DJs that listen to music and there's DJs that feel music. And it's the same with people. I feel music. I don't listen to it. I feel it. Mm. I allow it to sweep over me in a way that can change my emotions and feelings. It makes my hair stand on end. And that's sort of the connection. I don't need any other substance to do that because music is the best drug there is in the world. And that goes without, and that's from someone that's taken every drug in the world and can tell you, honestly, music is the one that if I didn't have, I would be dead. Because, you know, it's not something that I could ever say, oh, I'm done with that now. Because music, you're never going to be done with music. Music's a time machine. It takes you to places and you can be with people that are no longer there. You can be in certain tunes will just take you straight back to that moment. And that's the beauty of it. Nothing, you can take as many ecstasy or as much cocaine as you want. It's never, ever going to take you to where music can. And that's the difference now. So for me, I go, I do my job. And I love my fucking job. It's not a ways and means for me to get drugs or money anymore. It's now something that I love, which it wasn't.
It's something purer, isn't it?
It really is. Honestly, it's you know, when we're really young and we go out to our first rave or we go to our first club or to our first party, we're not going because the barman sells really good drinks or Gary from down the road's got some ease that he's selling. We're going because we want to connect with music. We go for the excitement. Mm. And when the first time we ever go to Ibiza or we go anywhere in the world, we're so connected to it. We think, I want to live here. That's it. We come back. I'm moving to Magaluf. Do you know, that's what we do, right? Because we have that connection. We have that connection. But the more you go and the more suddenly that you lose that connection by bringing in other ingredients. It's like a perfect cake mix. You take out the flour and you put in nuts instead. It ain't going to go the way it's meant to go. And that's what we do. You know, we put in alcohol, we put in drugs, and suddenly we forget about the real reason why we went in the first place, which was music. Do you know what I mean?
And it gets harder and harder to recreate those feelings of euphoria, of like excitement and everything that you experienced when you were just there, like young, enjoying it, being yourself. Because those synthetic highs are not the same, are they?
No, they're not. And I just think, you know, for me, people always say, oh, what's your best night out or your best gig? And I always say it's never happened. It hasn't happened yet. It's, you know, because every time is different and every, I don't think, oh, things that, you might be go, oh, I don't go out anymore because it's not the same. Thank fuck it's not the same. Can you imagine how boring it is? Do you know what I mean? The same six tracks. Fuck off. Do you know what I mean? There's a reason it ain't still the same. You know, it's just, it literally, people hold on to moments. And I just think just be in the moment each time you go out will make new moments for you to hold on to. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I completely understand. And what is like painstakingly obvious when I'm chatting to you, Tony, is like you have grown, you've evolved, you've changed. Yeah. And I don't know if it's been something that's happened since you've been sober or what, if you were always just going to be this really impressive fella. But it feels like whatever stage of life that it throws at you, like you're ready for it, you know? I feel like, I don't know if this is true, but I read somewhere that addicts, people in recovery, whatever, they kind of, they struggle. They always replace one addiction with another.
Yeah.
You think that's true? Did that happen 100%. For you?
100%. Yeah, it totally happened with me. I from the age of 10, when I was sexually introduced to sex at such a young age, that changed my life. That suddenly became a superpower. Sex became a bargaining tool. It became a way of survival. It became a way of getting forward. It, you know, I used sex for everything, to change the way I felt, like I would use cocaine or I would use anything. So when that was always my primary illness, and I've learned this over the years, that sex is really what drove me. So when you introduce a drug like cocaine or a drug like ecstasy or any other drug or a drug, and I will say a drug like alcohol, into your equation, that prolongs it, that takes away your inhibitions, that takes away everything. So what happens is you suddenly use all of these newfound fixes to cover up the other fix. So it's like lighting 16 little bonfires with one massive one in the middle to create smoke screens. So when you get rid of all of those other little bonfires and suddenly you're left with this raging fire, which is you in the middle, you know, it's really hard to just keep that contained. And, you know, for me, I put down drink and drugs. I didn't think that I ever had, I knew I had a drug problem. I never thought I had an alcohol problem because it never ran out. And it was only at 6 o'clock in the morning when I was waiting outside the local shop for it to open to buy whatever vodka they sold or whatever they sold that I realized, oh my God, you've got a real drink problem. But you know, that was, you know, but for me, it was always about drugs. So sex was never a problem. I'm a gay man. I can have as much sex as I want. No. That kind of thinking is silly. So when I put down the drink and the drugs, the sex went through the roof.
You took away those other issues and you sort of were able to see what was probably underlying.
I hold my hands up, you know, to it. I would have sex six times a day with different random people that I met on apps. And what it did was it left me soulless. It left me
empty.
Totally. Yeah. I'd given away everything. I'd given it all away. And that's like that, like any other addiction. It wants you in a room on your own wanting to kill yourself. And sex is like heroin. It's like cocaine. It has the same effect when you use something, whether it be sushi or cocaine or anything, to you use it to change the way you feel. It's always going to end up the same way. And sex really did have that problem. I really had that problem with sex. It's the only one that I still struggle with, in the sense of I will wake up some days and think, oh, today's a really good day to cheat. And it's not a good day to cheat. There's never a good day to cheat. Do you know what I'm saying to you? But I battle that now. Today I deal with it. I have tools to deal with that stuff. I never wake up thinking, today is a really good day to get a gram of coke.
Yeah.
No, I know what cocaine does to my life. I know everything I have in my life is because I don't do those stuff anymore. Yeah. Everything I have is not for what I do, it's because of what I don't do. And I'm not going to change that for anyone or anything. You know, I'm not going backwards. I never go backwards. I always go forwards through everything. And you know, it's addiction will always be there. It always, if I have sushi, I mentioned it a minute ago on a Monday and it's really good, I want it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because that's where I buy a pair of shoes, and you'll relate to this one. And I love them, and everyone compliments them. The next day, I will go and get them in three other different colour ranges. They'll stay under the bed. I'll never wear them, but I've got them. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I totally do. Like, I've spoken loads before. So my dad's an alcoholic, Tony. He struggled with it his whole life, you know, and like, I've just made a documentary with Channel 4 because for years I was absolutely convinced I've got addictive personality traits myself. Yeah. That like, there was something hereditary
it's hereditary. Yeah. We're born with
That I was just going to end up like my dad and that. And like, it doesn't even have to be a particularly destructive, addictive quality on the outs of like looking in, you know, it could be like going to the gym or it could be like eating health, but whatever I'm doing, mate. Yeah.
Set. Oh, everything, you know.
Everything. I'm like 110%. If I'm going out, I want to be the last one standing. But if I'm in the gym, fucking hell, I'm smashing it. It's so, and I realized like it took us to mid-30s that actually it doesn't matter if it's a healthy addiction or an unhealthy one, they're both toxic. So I strive for balance now.
They both take you to exactly the same place.
Yeah. Yeah. So exactly. I strive a bit for balance. And I was just wondering if that's where you're kind of at now as well.
You know what? You just hit the nail on the head. It's all about balance. Everything is about balance. You know, you do too much of one thing, it will go that way. You do too much of the gym, it will go that way. It's about finding what keeps you on the straight and narrow. There's a reason these stupid cliches come up. You know what? It's about balance. It really is. You know, if you want to drink Coca-Cola, but make sure you drink water as well with it. You don't need to drink six cans a day or whatever. You know, it's all about balance. You can have what you want. I found over the last 15 and a half years, the more things that I say I can't do, right, I can. You know, I really, truly believe that I can't, it doesn't exist in recovery, because you can do whatever you want to do it as long as you do it in a productive, right, balanced way. It's like eating food. Yeah, have junk food whenever you want, but don't just eat junk food. Do you get what I mean? You can go to McDonald's. Yeah, no. You want to go to McDonald's? Everyone loves Mackie D's. But make sure you counteract it for the rest of the week with other stuff. It's about changing and keeping it like this. You do too much of anything. And, you know, it's in all of us. Everyone gets, I don't have a problem with addiction. I'm like, how many times a week do you go to gym? Oh, every day. Oh, right, okay. Do you know what I mean? But you don't see
fucking
it.
Liar.
You know what I mean? You're not like, because they're not on a park bench drinking cider. They think they don't have a problem. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I know so many workaholics that end up having mental breakdowns and end up in hospital because they've exhausted themselves. You know, and then they what happens is they work so much, then suddenly at the weekend they'll binge drink to counteract the work. Yeah. And then before they know it, they're in another whole different scenario because they've met someone at work because they're not getting what their needs met at home because they're never at home. So it just goes around in a big old cycle. Just balance everything.
I think like it's the only way, isn't it? Like, as human beings, we're always going to be in search of that dopamine hit, that serotonin hit, that things that trick our brain into thinking we're happy and stuff. But it's about finding things that do that are healthy and good for us and doing them in moderation. That's the best
100%.
Advice.
Get a dog.
Oh, mate, I have. Adopted Milo last year, and honestly, he's the best thing that's ever happened to us.
Totally right. Changes your life for everything, doesn't it?
I'm so sorry about your loss, Tony. I really
You know what? It's kind of, it's one of those things, you know, fucking the iPhones can fuck off and all because every 2 minutes it's sending me pictures of dogs. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'll switch on Instagram and there's 10 fucking Staffordshire Bull Terrier puppies. Like, constantly, where did they come from? I never knew there was that many puppies. You know, it's everywhere. And people have been beautiful. People have been so beautiful sending me pictures and sending me pictures of rescue dogs and stuff. And I really, you know, I'm really blessed that people take the time to stop me and say, oh, they love what I do. But then they'll tell me how sorry they are for my dog. And it's really at the wrong moments. please don't talk about my dog. But you know what it is? I'm dealing with it. And I know that I will. My boyfriend Stabby's got a dog called Raph. And he's always at my house. So having Raph here has really helped. Yeah. Really, really helped. Today, I got someone sent me a beautiful painting of my dog, like Alan Karzik's husband, Paul Drayton. He sent me a picture he had done. Yeah. Just beautiful people doing beautiful fucking things. And, you know, her actually came home last week. She's on the side in the living room. And, you know, I know she's with me. And I just, you know, people who don't have dogs and have never gone through it really just think that we are stupid or like, oh, my God, it's only a dog. Fuck off. It's not only a dog. Taylor was never a dog. She was family, not a family pet. Oh, you've lost a family. She weren't a pet. She was my family. You know.
I know.
She like.
Honestly.
Yeah. And it's getting better and it's getting easier the more I talk and joke about it and stuff like that. But I will get another dog, but not your Autumn. I know when I meet her, and it will be a girl, when I meet her, I know who she is. Yeah. Do you get what I mean? I know.
She'll be sent by Taylor, man. Honestly.
You know that. 100%. I totally believe it. It's really weird. And, you know, this woman called Rachel Townsend, this woman, she's married to Pete Townsend from The Who. She messaged me and she said, yeah, no, clang, right? But there's a reason for it. She messaged me and she was like, she's a remarkable woman. She wrote a requiem for lost pets that died. Beautiful, beautiful requiem. And I went to it a couple of years ago. Anyway, she messaged me when Taylor passed. And she said, I don't want you to be freaked out or anything, but I want to tell you, I have psychic powers. Like, you know, I'm a psychic. And Taylor came to me last night. And she mentioned three of Taylor's toys by name.
No. Oh, I've got goosebumps, like stuff like that.
No way. No, she wants you to know that she's running. Her legs are working. She said, she wants me to tell you that she loves Stabby, your new man, and she's not over keen on his dog because all poodles are stupid. And Raph's dog's like a rescue from Cyprus. Raph's rescue from Cyprus. You've got a bit of poodle in him. And she's mentioned her three of her teddies by name. No one in this world would know that I named those stupid toys, like a badger, a rat, and that. Like, name. She mentioned them all by name. And I was just like, because at first I was like, oh, thanks. And then when she got to that bit, I was like, what? How would she know that? I went to my Instagram. There's no mention of anything. Yeah.
Brought you comfort. It's brought you solace. Yeah. I think whatever
works. Like anything, right? When we believe in anything, we start to believe. We get faith. And when we get faith, right, we're on our journey. That's it. It gives us the strength to move forward. And you know what? If that's what I need to believe in right now, that she's sent me, she said, so be it.
That's exactly it. And listen, like, in terms of your journey, Tony, like, you look fucking healthy. You look well. You look handsome. You look strong.
Oh, thank you.
You're about to be, and I'm putting it out there, I'm manifesting it for you, a Sunday Times bestseller. You're fucking smashing it, right? And it feels like you're in a great place in your life. And that's probably why it was possible for you to write the book. But it's got to be. I've got to give him a mention before going for that. It's got to be down a little bit to Stabby as well, hasn't it?
100%. You know what? Whilst I was writing the book, I split up with my ex-partner after 8 years, and it was really, 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 really harrowing and really a dark time for a few, like a good 4 or 5 months. It was awful. Mm. We were going through all that breakup stuff that you do, silly things to each other, all of that stuff. And Stabby came along like this shining light, and it's the first time in my life I've ever been in a completely transparent relationship. Everything that we there's no secrets.
Yeah.
And I've never been in any form of relationship in my life.
It's healthy. It's fucking healthy, Tony.
That is it. And you know what? My mum said to me last week, she came up to stay, and I hadn't seen her for like 2 years properly. She came just up to London, and she was like, look at you. Look at you. It's like there's something shining out of your eyes. And I was just like, I'm just really happy, Mum.
I'm in love, Mum.
I don't think I've ever felt as content and happy as I do right now. And that's not a smugness. It's actually, no. I just, there's points where I just think, oh my God, life's really good. Do you get what I mean? And yeah. It's even better now this man's in my life. And it's, and his dog. Do you know what I mean? Just, yeah.
Don't forget Raf.
Yeah, Raf's amazing. Do you know what I
mean? Yeah. Oh, well, Tony, before I let you go, here at Vicky Patterson's Secret 2, we always ask our gorgeous guests to give our lovely listeners a little pearl of wisdom, a nugget, if you will. And I just don't think we can let your beautiful blossoming relationship with Stav Eat go. So I want to know what your secret is to a healthy relationship.
Just be honest and transparent and just don't cheat. I'm honest, you know, I've cheated on every relationship I've ever been in every relationship ever, because I never believed in myself. I felt less than the other person. I never felt good enough. So what I would do is I would destroy it internally. I would act out with people that I would never even fancy in a million years. I would act out because I wanted to destroy my own, the way I was feeling. And now, today, I can hold my head up high, and I'm in such a place where I love myself, therefore I can love Stabby. And I just think that the minute you get to that point where you actually think, I'm all right, you know, I'm a good fucking person, and you start to believe yourself. Don't get me wrong, I wake up some days feeling old or fat or all that stuff, but it only lasts a few minutes. I don't allow it to resonate anymore.
Consume,
I can love today, which means therefore I can be loved. Do you know what I mean? Really, because if you told me that a year ago you loved me, I would have told you to fuck off. I'd be like, I used to say all the time, you tell me you love me, I will run a mile. You tell me, you call me a cunt and tell me you hate me, I'll take you on fucking holiday. Do you get what I mean? That's the way it was. And now I really can accept love because I love myself.
You know, I've got that point in my life where
I know that I'm good enough. So my top tip is just be honest. Yeah. Be honest in everything you do.
But also love yourself as well, like listening
100%.
To you know, everyone always says to me, like, oh, you're so pleased Erkan came along. And absolutely, I'm over the moon. He's a fucking lovely bit of kit. He makes us so happy. But I was never ready before to accept the things that Erkan brought into my life. I myself had things I had to work on.
We go through life thinking that we're never good enough. We're too old, we're too fat. We're just, you know, I don't deserve him. And at the end of the day, you know, you put out in this universe what you get back, right? And that's a fact. You know, if you're a cunt, you end up with a cunt. End of story. Do you know what I'm saying? But to allow someone to be a cunt to you, you must be a cunt in the first place to actually sit with it. And I know everyone's different and it's all to do with circumstances. You know, I've been in all of those circumstances and I've done all of those circumstances in my lifetime. And, you know, I truly believe now that I've got to this point where I've worked on myself and in recovery for so long that I feel that I have got to a whole new, without sounding like a cunt, I really feel that the sun's shining in my heart right now. It really
That's
is.
Lush. No, you that know, is lush.
Don't get me wrong, I'm still waking up at 3 a.m. thinking, oh, no one's going to buy my book or they're going to wait till the reviews come out and all of that stuff. Do you know what? No one can judge me like I judge myself. And I've done all the judging I ever want to do in my life. I'm just really happy. I've got a book coming out. What more do you want? It's like, fuck, man, it's insane. I was homeless 15 and a half years ago with no teeth, living on the street. Do you know what I mean? Like, my boyfriend was the only person that saved my life. And all I ever thought about was dying. And today, all I think about is how much I enjoy life. And that's because little by little, I put the work in. And, you know, it hasn't been an easy ride. Life isn't easy, right? It's not easy.
But I love this journey for you, Tony. You deserve every bit of success coming your way, mate. No, you're so welcome. Like, you've made me grin from ear to ear. You deserve all this happiness. And I can't wait to come to your residency in Ibiza.
You better come as well. I'm telling you.
I'll bring the moves.
You know that you'll be hanging out in the toilets for all the right reasons.
I love you, mate. Tony's book, I Don't Hit Request, is out now, guys. And it's a must read. Get your hands on one.
You better read it now.
I fucking better, mate. Right, thank you so much, you're a dream.
Thank you, Vicky. God bless you.
Well, guys, that was the hilarious and refreshingly honest DJ Fat Tony. Feel terrible calling him that. But he doesn't seem to mind. I'm dying to get my teeth into his new book. It sounds pretty incredible. It doesn't sound like it's going to be an easy read, but I think it's definitely going to be illuminating and heartfelt. And I think an important read. So yeah, well done to him. I hope it's a fucking resounding success. He deserves it. If you enjoyed this week's episode of Vicky Patterson The Secret 2, you can follow DJ Fat Tony. He's just exactly that on Instagram. But also don't forget to take his to get his book, I Don't Take Requests. That is out now. Everywhere you should get your books. It's like Waterstones. Apparently he has a very nice little book signing tour with those guys. So if you want to meet the man himself in the flesh, get yourself a way to that. If you're loving my series, then do all the podcasty things. Leave a review, tell your mate, subscribe. That's the important one now. And have a really great week, guys.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.